there, folks. I am Emily.
And I'm Elf.
And this is Oh My Word, a podcast where we review books, movies, musicals, TV shows, and whatever else we feel like to give you a sense of what the content is, its appropriateness, and sometimes we give our opinions on whether or not you should consume it.
Yeah, that's all there is to say about that.
Elf is auditioning for the role of Forrest Gump, which requires a lot of boxes of chocolates, and boxes of chocolate are more expensive than they should be. Hot take, firm opinion, chocolate boxes are too expensive.
Amen?
Yes. All right, that's all. I just thought I'd throw that out there, because it's something I wanted to buy myself a box of chocolates, but it's kind of expensive. Like, now I understand why it's a gift.
Well, you're not supposed to buy yourself the expensive box and then wonder why it's expensive.
I know. I just wanted to buy myself, like, I like having that kind of chocolate, but I'm not going to sit around waiting for someone to buy it for me. But apparently I am, because it's too expensive to buy for myself.
Yes. I would say that logic has something to do with the books we're talking about today, but I haven't read it. So today's book, what we're speaking about today, is Mercy by Jodi Picoult. Incorrectly pronounced Picoult or Picoult or Picoult. Yeah, we don't. Apparently everyone mispronounces her name, so we went to look it up. And then even after looking it up, we're still not sure if we're saying it correctly. So here we are. But I think everyone knows who we're talking about. So Mercy is about a woman who's terminally ill and asks her husband to kill her to end her suffering. Sort of. It's kind of like euthanasia, but I guess it's not really, because if he just murders her, because then he gets on trial for murder. And the big question of the book is, what is love and what is mercy? And the book is called Mercy. Amazing.
Beautifully said. Well done, Elt.
Thank you.
Yes. So I've been on a little bit of a Jodi Picoult kick recently. Yeah, I've just been enjoying her books and books that are sort of similar to hers. I don't know exactly what the genre would be. I guess contemporary novels, because they're not quite chick lit, because chick lit is usually more specifically just about boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl back. Like, they're really more romances, and her books are not specifically romance.
They'll probably call it woman's fiction and then add a few more categories to it if there's other, whatever the other big issues involved are.
Gotcha. Okay, so I've been on a women's fiction kick. Though it's interesting, I wonder, like, what is men's fiction? It's like crime novels and stuff like that?
Yeah, guys probably, they don't really call them men's fiction. They just consider probably thrillers and mysteries probably have a higher male readership, mm-hmm. even though a lot of women enjoy mysteries and thrillers as well. But right. I think it's just general fiction and then specifically women's fiction because it's geared toward a woman. Not necessarily, some people might think of that in a negative way, but it's not, I think it just specifies, just if you know your audience, that's what you're going for kind of thing. So.
Gotcha. All right.
Men can read it too.
Right. But the main characters tend to be female, and I can see why the main audience is female. Her books are always morality plays. That's where the word play comes into mind. You know, she brings up various issues and explores them, and she doesn't give answers, and her books don't end tied in neat little bows. They end satisfactorily. Like, as a reader, you always get that sense of satisfaction and closure that you're looking for in an ending. Closure in terms of they end well, but they don't always end necessarily how you want them to end. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because ending things is hard. So if you can end them well, that's a definite skill. But they're not fairy tales. They're about real people and real issues and real mistakes that people make. We'll get to our ratings in just a second, but I do have to comment because, so in this book, there is an affair that happens, and there are affairs in a lot of her books, and also in a lot of women's fiction, now that we know the genre. There's just affairs happening right and left. Is that a reflection of the real world? Are there this many affairs going on? What's with all the affairs? And, yeah, like, married people having affairs. Like, what is that?
Yeah. I don't know. It's also in film also that you see that. And you're just like, what is wrong with everybody? They're sleeping with each other. As in, not that they're sleeping with each other, but all the married people are sleeping with other people. I don't know. I think some people are probably like, oh, yeah, of course it's a sign of what's going on. But I hope that most of us think that, well, actually, I don't know if this is the right way to say it, but I would rather it be that they're just trying to be edgy or put in the darkness, whatever, than to be an actual reflection of things. Mm. I think for us as a society, we all know that the role of marriage and the sanctity of marriage is not what it used to be, unfortunately, especially in the view of larger society, of the wider society. If marriage is not as holy as it used to be or viewed as precious as it used to be, then what's it to put have an adult having an affair and it not being the most scandalous thing that you ever wrote in a book? Obviously, they're not the first people to do these things. But I would hope that people who have, not because these people don't have such a whole, like a holy view of marriage, but I like to think of people that, because I think she's married and she probably, you know, I don't think she's frivolous about her marriage.
Right.
In the wider view, if we don't, those of us who don't like that society is going there would probably try hard not to include that in our book instead of just saying, well, this is the way things are, or people can read this without it being so scandalous anymore. Instead, we would just try to not put it in there, to not either encourage it, normalize it, or make allowances for it. Or if it is included, it's because it's included with a negative viewpoint and condemnation. Not because we're being judgy, but because we don't want this. It's not good for the fabric of society to just be so flippant or okay with affairs. I think that was a long, convoluted answer, but that doesn't mean it's not an accurate answer.
Yeah, in this book in particular, it sort of is one of the many answers to the question of what is love, because we'll call her the main character. Allie is married to Cam and he has an affair with this girl. I say girl, she's young, she's in her 20s, so she's not like a kid, but he's supposed to be like in his 30s, so there's a little bit of an age difference there. So he has this affair and then Allie ends up taking him back. Yes, I guess this is a spoiler, but the book came out in 1995, so
yeah. You're so full of spoilers these days. Yeah.
I know. We're spoiled rotten. Something like that. So I guess the question is like, what is love? Because he's deeply, madly, passionately in love with this woman that he has this brief affair with. But then he clings to his wife and is full of remorse and realizes that, you know, maybe love is more than just this crazy sensual passion, but is the person who is there by your side. So the affair sort of is in line with the question of the theme of what is love. But it's just interesting because there are affairs in so many women's fiction and also chick lit. So I was just wondering where all that came from.
Yeah. Because it's not a real thing that there are people in relationships, even however much they love their spouse or, you know, their other half, it doesn't mean that they're not, that there's not temptation. But that brings us back to Shane, which we spoke about a while ago. We should be encouraging them to move past the temptation and not give in to temptation. Even if it does teach them something important in the end, we still want to give them strength to not give in to temptation because it is a hard thing to fight against.
Yeah. And every once in a while, I think we've talked about it a couple of times, and Shane, and I think it came up maybe in a TV show that we, or a movie we talked about, when characters are able to turn down the temptation, that is a much stronger, because there are so many affairs and people cheating in culture and pop culture these days, that when a character has the strength to turn it down, that really strikes a chord. You know, it stands out. Anyway, Mercy, it's interesting. So it's set in this small town in Massachusetts, which is where a lot of her stuff is set. I think she must be from around there. And the town, Wheelock, is basically a whole clan from Scotland came over to the US and settled in this area. And they called it Wheelock because it was a wee lock. A loch is like a little body of water.
Oh.
So then it became like the name was Wheelock. But the traditions from Scotland still hold over. So this clan still has a chief, even though it's sort of just a figurehead. And that chief also is the chief of police. So that's sort of how it translates over. Like technically he still owns land in Scotland and there are all these, like at his wedding, he wore kilts and a sword. And the reason that the man who kills his wife, the reason it happens in this town is because he turns himself into his cousin, or is like his third cousin, who's the chief of police, because he knows that his cousin, who's the chief of police, but also the clan leader, has some familial obligations that a regular police chief wouldn't have. So he feels like he can turn himself in to his cousin and be treated more fairly than he would be treated somewhere else.
With more mercy. Oh.
With more mercy. Yes. And in fact, he is, because his cousin Cam, so James is the guy who kills his wife. Cam is the chief of police. Cam secretly pays for the defense attorney who helps James throughout the trial. So there is some more mercy there.
Pearl Clutching ratings, which are on a scale of 0 to 4, 0 being the bestest and 4 being not the bestest, the absolute opposite of bestest. Violence is a 3, language is a 4, romance is a 4. Very adult book. Doesn't mean that we should allow 4s to exist, but doesn't mean we should encourage 4s just because, oh, but adults use the F word all the time. Yes, many of them do, but many of them also don't. So that's why we still clutch our pearls when we see it.
Yes. Well, same thing. Like, the romance is a 4 primarily because there is this hot and heavy affair going on. And then at one point, the wife, when she finally finds out, she goes to a bar to get drunk, and there a guy hits on her and she sleeps with him. But I think she leaves in the middle of it. She's like, I don't know what I'm doing. I know my husband cheated on me, but this is not like who I am. But it's pretty hot and heavy. And again, that's a major theme of the whole book, is the affair and the question of what is love. So it has to be a 4. Language, like you said, it's just there. They use the F word. I don't know why. You and I don't use the F word, and we manage to talk a lot.
That is true. We don't even make up, even though we have our own language sometimes, we didn't even have to make up an equivalent F word.
That's true.
Yeah.
So no excuses there. And then violence, I think it's a 3 because he murders his wife, kills his wife, whatever word you want to use. That felt like a 3 to me. He smothers her with a pillow. That feels violent. You know, and it's what the whole book is about. Maybe it's not super graphic, but I feel like once we've gotten to murder, we gotta bump up that score, clip some extra pearls.
That's fair. So as part of the question, I guess the question of the trial is this, if it's a mercy killing, or if he did this for love that you requested it, is that still considered murder?
Exactly. And there are specific, I mean, you know, murder is a moral term, but it's also a legal term. So to prove murder in court, even though technically he killed her, like he admits to killing her, he writes a confession, he's not pretending that he didn't kill her. Murder is something that has to be proven in a court of law. So to be found guilty for murder is a specific thing, you know? Right. I mean, when you use the word murder, you're talking both in a moral sense and also in a legal sense. So in this sense, you know, he's on trial for the legal sense of murder. There's something interesting also that the character James talks about. He says that in relationships, it's never 50-50. It's always like 40-60 or 70-30. There's always one person who's more in love than the other. And he says, in his case, he was the one who was so much more in love that he was willing to do this for his wife. Though even he starts to question it, you know, once he does it, even though his wife, her whole body is shutting down because of cancer, her organs, she's starting to go blind. Like, it's very sad. And so she asks him to end the suffering. But, you know, who was being more selfish there? Was she being selfish by asking him to do that terrible thing? Because even if she was going to die, you know, a month from then because of the cancer, he still had to kill a human being. He had to hold the pillow over her head until she stopped breathing. Like, that's not a small thing to ask someone.
Right.
So was she being selfish by asking him to do it? Or was he being selfish by not wanting to live with her in that state? I think that's another question that the book asks.
Interesting. That's actually interesting what you said about the 100%. But you said it, this is specifically about love, because my grandmother always talks about how marriage being 50%, it's because sometimes one side will show up more than the other that day, because if one side is having a harder day, they can only put in 40% into the relationship or 30% into the relationship. She did it without using the word love, because it's more than love. It's about commitment and showing up, knowing what you got to do. Sometimes you got to, quote unquote, cover for the other person. So maybe that's also just a reflection that goes back to the affair thing, is the emphasis of all these relationships just love, 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 love? Is there something more to it about commitment and dedication, and what happens at the times when it's not just about passion and hotness and all that other stuff? Can things last, or is it still love even if you don't have that there, or that day it's not there? Which is obviously not what the book is talking about, but it's kind of what we spoke about, so that's why I brought it up.
Well, I mean, it is sort of what the book talks about, because Allie and Cam, in their relationship that's failing theoretically, she does everything for him. You know, she cooks and she cleans and she makes sure that everything is perfect because he's the chief of police and it's a stressful job. So she wants to make sure that everything at home is smooth so that he doesn't have to worry, which is, you know, maybe she is putting in a little bit more and maybe it's too much for him. He wants a little bit more freedom, but freedom, you know, to sleep with whoever you want, I guess could be a nice thing, but also is it better than having someone at home who loves you and really supports you and takes care of your needs? You know, it's
definitely less meaningful.
Yes, definitely less meaningful. But that's what Jodi Picoult does with this book and with all the book. Not just, I mean, the whole book brings the question of euthanasia and mercy killings. And even though it ends one way, I don't think she necessarily makes a statement about what she thinks is right. I mean, maybe a little bit, but you're still left to make your own choices about the characters and if you think they're right or wrong. So she brings up these big topics like euthanasia or whatever, but then also these things about what is the nature of love and relationships and mother-daughter relationships, husband and wife and parents and siblings, all these things. They're real people dealing with real things. And I think she does it with a very deft hand. And these are the kind of books that I just want to sit and I don't want to stop reading until I get to the end, because I have to know how it ends. And they're so engaging. She also writes a lot of her books with each chapter from a different character's point of view, which I really like. So you get to, because that gives her an opportunity to really show the characters and what they're thinking and what they're doing and not just from another. That's maybe the only way that she can do her books, because she does make all these real characters, is to show them from each different person's perspective.
Even though there's a lot of pearls being clutched, there's still thoughts that are being provoked.
Yes. Pearls are going to be clutched, but if there are going to be this many pearls clutched, at least it should be done in a book that's well-written and thought-provoking, you know, and not just all the pearls clutched to shock or whatever.
Or something.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's that.
Is that good? Did I do good?
You know, we'll have to do the evaluation off air to pull out the charts and, you know, the laser pointer, all that stuff.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's fair. Yeah, we don't want the listeners to have to stick around for that. They have more important stuff to do, like subscribing to the podcast, leaving a rating and a review, and sharing the podcast with people.
And following us on Instagram and all the places to see what we're up to and what we're reading. And follow-ups for episodes, reveals for episodes, sneak peeks.
Yeah, all that stuff. Find us on Instagram at Oh My Word Podcast. And find us next week right here, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Correct. Catch you next time, everyone.
Bye.
Oh My Word Podcast is brought to you by the Pearl Clutching Basement Dwellers at Oh My Word. Follow us on Instagram for updates at Oh My Word Podcast, or like and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. For full episode notes and detail, visit eltenenbaum.com. Music is by Tim Burke. Sound is by Gabriel Yaffe. See you next time.